As I mentioned before the theme for tonight and this month is Sukha. So this in the Pali is Sukha, and the literal translation is good space. So if dukkha is ill-fitting space, and this refers to the hole in which the axle of the chariot or the ox cart fits. If it's a bad space, the ride is dukkha. If it's a good space, it's meant to refer to sukha. But this means a lot more than just good or bad, pleasant or unpleasant. It has a whole range of different depths and dimensions to it. So as I was thinking about this for today, I'm incapable of doing a recap. So just to say, I can't do it. So I'm not going to try, but what I am going to do is just offer a bit less tonight, an image, and then three practice prompts that hopefully you can take with you and contemplate in your own way. And then we'll have a chance to talk together. But as I was thinking about sukha, the translations that I find most helpful for sukha are ease and contentment. Yeah, I find happiness really tricky. Sometimes it's translated as happiness. I find that very tricky. But ease and contentment, I think, give us a flavor or a sense. And in its broadest meaning, it's referring to the kind of ease and contentment that we can get a sense of as practice starts to deepen. So it can have a meaning of the ease and contentment that comes from a good sensory experience, like you have a good meal, you're just full enough, somebody says something pleasing to you. These are all, in a way, sukha. But there's also the sukha that can arise from living in alignment with our values, feeling a sense of blamelessness, having a sense of spiritual friendship, connection. These are also sukha in a way. But in particular, especially in the map that we're tracing, it has to do with the way, as we ease in to practice, we can get a taste of a kind of gradual letting go, a gradual relaxing or softening of tension that we can feel and notice and appreciate. It's not a straight line, and it doesn't mean that there isn't any unpleasantness in the vicinity. It means that we've kind of gotten a flavor for what this letting go feels like so that we're able to allow a wider range of experience than we were previously able. So as I was thinking about this developing a taste or kind of acclimating in a way to this feel for letting go and appreciating the feedback that we can get when we're letting go, when we're more aligned with the present moment, eased into how things actually are. I was reminded of she used to be a performance artist that I would see in my 20s here in Seattle, but she's since made movies and written short stories. Her name is Miranda July. And she wrote in one of her short story collections, it's a wonderful title, No One Belongs Here More Than You. It's the name of the short story collection. And one of the short stories was called Swim Team. And the story was about three elderly, I think they were all women, who had never learned how to swim, decided they wanted to learn how to swim, but there was no pool in their town. So this person starts trying to teach these people to swim in her apartment when there's no water in sight. So she's trying to explain how the water feels, how it's helpful to move, how you practice letting go, and how you practice floating without being in the water. Right? And so, in some ways, this is what it's like when we read about the Dharma, even when we offer a talk about the Dharma, and we discuss things like letting go and happiness. It's like, oh, yes, it makes perfect sense. It sounds just right. But it's like practicing swimming when we're on dry land. And in here, obviously, you can experience dukkha. Yeah? It can be too cold, too hot. You can not like what I'm saying. Your pants can be too tight. You can be too full. There's plenty of opportunity to experience dukkha. But talking about it is not the same thing as, saying dukkha and sukha, but experiencing it in the moment. So we can get a feel, much like the way you would ease into a pool, right? And get a sense. How do I sink? How do I float? Yeah? What's the least amount of effort that I can use? Do have to take some effort in order to float, but you get the feel for it. And you get the feel for it by trying things out and experimenting, getting it wrong. When my son, who's 13 now, almost 13, was learning how to swim, he is fairly risk-averse being, and he got into the pool with every inflatable device possible, right? He had like a noodle underneath each arm, he had a board behind him, and he had a raft in front of him, and it was like every single prop to help keep me afloat, right? And that's how many of us are, until he could slowly trust that the water, that he could acclimate to the water. And so it was in a way, it was a gradual process of slowly releasing the accoutrement that was around him, until he could get a sense of how his body related to the water. And there was thrashing, and there was water up the nose, and all the things. But it occurred to me that this is a lot like what our gradual deepening of practice is like. Yeah. We need supports, we need aids, we need anchors, we need resources. Yeah. And we will likely need all of those things for a long time. So it's to appreciate and use all of the supports that we have around us. And we can also appreciate the process of gradually being supported by the water that we're in, right? By the environment that we're in learning how to acclimate and align with how things actually are. But we get a taste for this. It's, sometimes we are forced into a pool and we don't have the benefit of a gradual process and we have to figure it out and learn. But there are other moments, especially if we're deepening a practice over time, where we can feel, ah, it's a little bit easier. Yeah? Ah, oh, there's a little bit more lightness here. There's a little bit more room to move. What do you know? I'm floating. Yeah, it's not because I did it. It's because I learned a little bit more about the conditions that help support the experience of floating, or this particular experience. So we get a taste for this gradual process. And what I want to highlight tonight, I mentioned it in the guided sit, is that sometimes we need permission to, especially in an achievement-oriented culture that puts a lot of emphasis on getting to the finish line, getting the reward at the end, putting in all the grit and hard work, and then we rest. At the end, after we've done a good job and everything's done, good luck, right? Good luck. So, this is it possible in our own unique, weird, imperfect way, perhaps with like a noodle under each arm, we can appreciate deepening into a process that is more and more supporting us rather than us having to earn it, deserve it, or make it happen. So, permission to enjoy that process. Does it mean it's always comfortable and fun? No. There'll be times where it's boring, times where it's painful, times when it's heartbreaking and disappointing. Times where you feel like you're heading right up against a brick wall again and again and again. But more and more, we will notice experiences of a natural, perhaps, acclimation to our human condition, to this realm, this form, this being that we can notice. So permission to enjoy the practice, enjoy your life, these conditions. So in practice, we move from what's talked about in the early teachings as sukha that arises from external conditions to sukha that arises from practice, from being able to reorient, have a different perspective, get a feel for letting go, and more and more rely on awareness to do the work, to know what's happening. So we can encourage this and help support this. One of my teaching colleague friends who I used to teach the young adult retreat with for a few years would do this thing in the middle of a talk where this is Alexis Santos. In the middle of a talk, he would ring the bell. He'd just stop and ring the bell. And he would say, when you hear the sound of the bell at the end of a sitting, doesn't everything in you just relax? Like, ah. Okay, sitting's over. Yeah, pain is over. So what if you just practiced like that? Like the end was already there. Yeah? The release valve has already been opened. Yeah? So practice as though you've already been let off the hook. You've already got the job. You've already crossed the finish line. You've already been let out of class. Practice like that, like you're already on vacation. It's not at the end. Yeah? So, something to kind of play with, experiment with. We all have our own ways. So, many of you have heard my ways in the guided practices of letting myself off the hook. Hopefully, you have your ways. My way is to remind myself there's nothing I have to protect, defend, promote, or maintain in this moment. Yeah. Nothing I have to earn or deserve or figure out. So you may experiment with what it's like for you. Okay. So we can start to notice that there is a difference between enjoying what arises and comes our way on its own terms versus needing it to do something for us. Can you feel the difference in that? If we need it to complete us, to kind of make us happy in some way, that is kind of what actually defeats the sense of contentment. The needing it to be a certain way is what defeats the contentment. So there's a line in the poem, desperately searching for happiness is the surest way to prevent it, or something like that. So resting back and sensing or feeling into how it's all happening on its own is a much more helpful approach. So I mentioned last week that there are two qualities that are often paired. It's the last thing I'll mention before we go to the three prompts, but there are two qualities that are often paired. And these are piti and sukha. And these come about in the energetic body as our mind starts to settle and ease into the present moment. So you'll notice, and you could even experiment with this, if you clench every muscle in your body and then relax and release it, there's a sense of kind of vitality, or like your circulation kind of coming back into that area. So as that vitality comes back in to places that have been held or clenched or tight, a kind of energetic experience arises, which is sometimes called piti, or delight. So we studied this a couple of months ago. And this is an energetic kind of uplift, sometimes called delight. But it's a sense of being kind of energized in some way. And when that softens or calms a bit, then we're closer to the territory of sukha, ease, contentment. Yeah? It's a softened version of that kind of intense delight or joy. So the similes in the early teachings are helpful in allowing us to get a sense of these. So in the early teachings, PT is described as somebody who's walking through a desert and has been parched for a long time and sees an oasis in the distance. And so there's this a little bit of a rush in feeling that fulfillment is close by. So similarly, we're kind of in the realm of moving towards concentration or a more continuous awareness in these particular qualities. PT, tranquility, contentment or sukha. So there can be a kind of uplift when we start to let go of some of the habitual gripping and grasping. And as that softens, there's a quality that's more like contentment. So the initial kind of being in the territory and feeling some of that grip release is piti or delight. And that's the sensing it in the distance. But it's the actual drinking of the water and feeling it saturate, feeling the coolness of the shade, and feeling the replenishment of the drinking of the water that is said to be sukha. So sukha is meant to refer to that quality of mind that can start to absorb more deeply. So the actions in the early teachings talk about when we have a feeling of ease or well-being or even kindness, letting that warmth and ease saturate, steep, pervade, suffuse the entire body mind. Yeah. So our body mind has this absorptive capacity. There's a New York Times article, it was recent, maybe some of you saw it, had a cool interactive thing going on the app. And research has now proven that there's a third circulatory system in the body. And they have realized this because by doing autopsies of people who've had tattoos done, they've been able to sense that ink in one place in the body can travel to a whole other place in the body, and it's not going through the circulatory system. It's not going through the lymphatic system. It's traveling through the interstitial layers in between tissues to other parts of the body. So lo and behold, like every other living system, the different parts of our body are connected. So what you do down at your toes or up at your head with your attention or anything else can have a ripple effect through the entire body, which acupuncturists and Chinese medicine practitioners and all sorts of people in other wisdom traditions have known forever. Yeah, but apparently now that Western science has discovered it, it's real. So, anyway, this dovetails with the kind of experience of energy opening up in the body as the mind starts to settle and be soothed. So we're no longer being dragged out, being pulled out, being scattered, going here, going there. Slowly, slowly, energy and attention start to gather and settle, and we resume our kind of natural vitality and a sense of growing contentment. Just in the experience of being. So this is piti sukha. Sukha is the ease of actually feeling the nourishment of not going out quite as much. Okay. So, three short practices that you can remember in the heat of the moment. And these arose out of questions that people asked last time, and when I gave a talk on this under 40 last week. So, three kind of practices or gestures that you can remember. And again, if we're trying to make contentment come about, we're barking up the wrong tree, or whatever that expression is. If we're desperately trying to relax or trying to make happiness happen, that's not a helpful approach. Yeah. Again, it's the resting back, easing in, getting a sense, acclimating. Appreciating. So, the first kind of practice prompt is something that several teachers have pointed to in different ways. So this is the encouragement to, especially if there is a sense of dread or resistance or frustration, you know? So some people asked in a response to the talk, two talks I gave over the last few weeks, well, what if I'm going into a situation that I'm dreading? Yeah. So this situation is filled with challenge and resistance. What do I do about practicing sukha in that condition where I'm kind of bracing against it or really dreading it in some way? So this practice prompt is one many of you have likely heard, but it is relax, observe, and allow. And sometimes there's the R that's added, respond. So it can be roar. Right? But this is how you ease into the pool, especially if it's uncomfortable. The relaxing, you don't command yourself to relax. You allow or invite a kind of softening around the discomfort or displeasure. You may not be able, you will likely not be able to change some of the acute discomfort, but you can soften against that attitude of bracing, dread, and tightening. So this is just encouraging a softening or relaxing. And the observe is the clear noticing of awareness, not adding, not diminishing, but just the clear noticing of awareness. And in the allowing, or the A, you can appreciate that there is energy and ease that is released in that process. It may be slight, it may be intermittent, but there is some increased ability to float when we do that. So it feels good, not in a hyper way, but it feels good to relax the grip of tightening and clinging to our preferences and our likes and dislikes. We develop a taste for that. So relax, observe, and allow go together. The second encouragement or practice prompt is a very common thought that many people will notice and people have talked about in Q and question and response periods is noticing that in any moment where the whirring stops, the noise stops, there's a question that comes up, what's next? Okay, what's next? Okay, got it. What's next? Yeah, what's next? The mind leaping up. What's next? We can feel that. We can feel that. And so if we don't bite that hook, that what's next hook, or I got to get to the next thing, yeah? It can come from a kind of checklist mind. Yeah, okay, got it. Let's go on to the next thing. So that arises and passes. And so the question can become instead of what's next, but what's here? What's here? What's here? And those questions are not questions to be answered with the discursive mind, but they're meant to take us deeper into the texture of the present moment's experience, the fullness of the present moment's experience. What's here? One of the questions I asked last week came from Rodney early on, who would say to things like around cultivating positive qualities and feeling the pain of wanting positive qualities that weren't present, and getting really exasperated with the pain of trying to make an experience happen that wasn't happening. And so he would ask this question, where is there contentment in this moment? Or is it already here? Is what I'm seeking already here? So the second gesture might be some flavor of what's here, or is there contentment already in this moment? Okay. The third practice prompt is to simply notice the easing of dukkha. So many of us who've been around practice scenes for a while, I know that for many periods in my practice, I thought I was very neutrally observing how things actually are. I thought I was being neutral. But a teacher pointed out to me on more than one occasion that there was actually a tinge of aversion and resistance, that it was not, in fact, neutral. And so to notice kind of the easing of resistance and dukkha. So just when it naturally eases or gets lighter, nothing is a constant experience. Right. Impermanence is part of the whole game. So instead of flagging dukkha all the time, which can be helpful to recognize, but we can also notice and appreciate its easing, its natural easing. When something kind of gets lighter, when a condition improves, not because we want it to or because we've strategized our way to it, but because of impermanence. Yeah. Something gradually starts to ease. Ah. So we can notice the natural easing of dukkha. Okay. So those three, just to recap, I can do it if it's in the same talk, I can recap. But easing into the pool. Yeah, you could call it easing into the pool of the present moment. So specifically, that's relax, observe, and allow, but you could also call it easing in to the pool. Whether it's a work meeting in which you know there's going to be a lot of contention or strife or boredom, ease into the pool. I am laughing at myself now because someone said to me the other day, "You sound so easeful when you're teaching." And I think I cackled out loud when they said that because this has been a 20-year endeavor, many of you know, of easing into an ice-cold pool. Right? Is this my natural comfort zone? No. Is the furthest thing from it. It's been a continual process of acclimating and repulsion, and acclimating and resistance, and going back and forth and back and forth. And appreciating every moment in which it was a little bit easier, yeah? In which it was a little bit easier. And then getting lost again and forgetting and despairing and all of that. But the more we can appreciate the gradual process of it, of this easing into the pool, and trust that we're entering a condition in which we will be more and more supported, the more that we can enjoy our practice. Yeah. Okay, so the first is easing into the pool. The second is, instead of what's next, what's this? What is already here? And the third is to notice the natural easing or lightening of dukkha. Sometimes you'll notice just a simple contentment for no reason. Undeserved, unprovoked, unstrategized, just a moment of enoughness. Sometimes we'll just notice that the gradual easing of resistance is enjoyable. If enjoyable is too strong, at least we can appreciate it. Okay. And the punchline to the talk tonight, or the reflections, are that we're always already in the pool. Yeah, yeah. Surprise! Yeah, we're already in it. So there's nothing better to do. Yeah, than, as I said last week, like collaborate with reality. Or acclimate to the conditions that are already there. It does not make us passive. It makes us more skillfully sensitive. Yeah. So, okay. So why don't we just sit for a quick moment? Or a moment, to be quick. And as you let the words just evaporate, perhaps there's a deepening sense in practice that the whole thing really does happen by itself. We can be aware of it. We can be sensitive to it. We can ease our way in. We can soften, but we're not at the center of it. Thank you. So I'd love to give you all a chance to speak to each other. Tonight, and then we'll come back and share. But we'll take about 15 minutes in groups of three. Okay, so I'm happy to help online if that's helpful. Sorry to spring this on the Zoom folks, but I can also orchestrate that if need be. So let's do groups of three, and just Before you shift, and before you freak out, those who haven't done it before, let me just offer a little bit by way of introduction to the speaking part. So this is equal parts content and being aware of your speaking and listening. Right? So it's mindful awareness practice in conversation, in speaking and listening. So we have the wonderful opportunity of being in a practice space with other meditators with a shared intention. So you can relax your usual gripping of trying to be understood, trying to present yourself in a certain way, trying to show how good of a listener you are, all of that. You get to just bring all of your awareness to listening when you're listening. And as you're speaking, just as simply and clearly and spontaneously as you can, what I would suggest, go in any direction you'd like, but if you would like a suggestion for a direction, pick one area where you feel some dread or resistance in your life, where there's some sense of, ugh, oof, yeah. And what is the practice of sukha? How do I bring sukha practice to this? If you'd like, you can use one of my three gestures. Easing into the pool. What's this? Noticing the easing of dukkha. Or just incline your mind towards this and just see what arises. See what comes forward. Okay. No right or wrong. No way to succeed or fail. You can't get kicked out. And please turn on your video if you're online. It's a great gift to those around you, those three, other in a group of three. And please stay with the structure. So please don't let it turn into just a chat. And please respect that it's a practice space, even though we're online. Okay, so I will ring the bell in, actually let's do 12 minutes, okay? So I'd love to hear if a couple people would be willing, just anything that came out of your speaking and listening. You can just not share the content of what someone else shared, but maybe anything about your experience with the prompt or with hearing and speaking with others. Anything around that. Lights? Sure. Thank you, Braden.
I shared a kind of joy or happiness when I've noticed a really bad habit that I had that is pretty much gone. And I think it, and I didn't like sit down and say, oh, I'm gonna work on this. And it, I think it's mostly gone because of the practice. And that what I shared was a kind of snarky tone and response to when somebody is doing something I don't want. And I pause more and I just go, oh, really all of this, all that's going on is they want this and I want that. And I don't have to be snarky. And it's just been, it's made me feel really a kind of ease and joy in the practice, just noticing that it kind of works.
It kind of works. That could be our byline. Seattle Insight. It kind of works. I love that too. So yeah. So, and I, yeah. Coming from a long line of sarcastic folks, I appreciate that. That there's some ease in not having to do that. That's great. Thank you. Dan.
There's a phrase you used that other teachers, I'm new at this, but things I'll listen to in podcasts or other teachers. And the phrase, which I may not be quoting correctly, is everything appears on its own. Things happen on their own. Something like that, which totally befuddles me. And it had something to do with, in our small group, that sense of, I think of responding to situations as what am I going to do next? But I'm getting the sense that that's not the point. The point is, how are you going to be with what's happening, not necessarily what you're going to do. So I think those two thoughts go together, but they continue to kind of escape me.
Yeah. There's a certain, I love that you use the word befuddled. That's one of my favorite words. There's a good kind of befuddled in practice, and that's where it feels to me like some of our habitual responses are kind of falling away, or we kind of have a sense of where things are headed, but we can't quite put it in a neat category with a definition and a check mark. Yeah. So it's often there's still a bit of interest there to keep exploring, but we don't feel like, oh, I've got it. Whenever we feel like, oh, I've got it, now I really have got it, that's delusion.
That's what I'm seeking.
Yeah, exactly. No, wouldn't that be nice if we could all just wrap it up? And yeah, but that sense of kind of, okay, the usual way that I've defined and oriented is it's not quite as solid as it usually is. And this new kind of perspective, not quite sure about it, that's a really fruitful place to be, to keep exploring. That's a kind of easing into the pool. And in terms of who's in control or what's in control, or whether things are happening on their own or whether we're creating them, you know, the breathing is a really wonderful place to experiment with that. We have some influence over it, but we forget about it for long periods of time, and it still happens. Yeah. Thoughts arise sometimes intentionally, but oftentimes very random. They're just occurring. Yeah. Certainly sensations in the body, our own aging. We're not orchestrating that. So getting a sense more and more of, oh, conditions are arising, coming into being, fading out of being. I'm not behind it, doing it. You know, mostly I'm trying to navigate and acclimate and attune. So that kind of the befuddlement of the linear mind is not a bad thing. Yeah. Thank you. Thanks for your comment. Appreciate it. And we'll have to turn now towards closing, but I hope this has been helpful tonight and given you some things to continue practicing with. Okay, so just before we say goodbye to online folks, let's just take a minute. We don't even have to close our eyes or do anything fancy with the posture, but we can just form the intention that the benefits of our practice be shared. That whatever fruit may have arisen from our efforts here today in silence and in speech, in listening, meditating, may those benefits be shared. May our practice be of great benefit to all beings everywhere, without exception.